Hello, welcome. I guess I'm the speaker, so I was going to kick this off by saying big ups to Aya and Alicia. All right, they deserve that. They deserve two claps. Okay, so a really quick introduction. I'm Lamour Freed. I run Adafruit Industries, which is downtown Manhattan, so I got to take the 7 here. And I've been doing open source hardware and selling it as part of this business since 2006. And I have really good news. All the people who heard me talk, I'm actually not going to talk about my business because I and Alicia said, hey, we want pragmatic, hobbyist, solutions-based driven stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to talk about all the details of shipping and manufacturing and licensing and all of that stuff. I'm actually going to talk about why do open source hardware, and specifically why did I do open source hardware, and maybe some reasons why you may want to do open source hardware if you don't. So we're going to rewind back to 2002 and 2003, and we're going to stop at 2006. So it's all going to be history. So, I grew up in Boston, and Boston is sort of the seat of, the FSF, and the EFF used to be there too. And so there's a lot of Linuxy, BSD people hanging out there, and I went to MIT. And so there was a culture of open source software. We sort of assumed that if you were going to work on something, it would be an open source software project, and installing Linux and running it was totally cool, and Microsoft sucked. And so when I started moving away from doing software and doing more electronics, I had this core of open source software is good, and I've seen the good it does, and so I was definitely inspired by that. So it's not like I came up with open source hardware out of nowhere. It's a derivative of open source software. And what I would do when I was learning electronics is that I would release stuff, like these are some earlier projects that I did, some development boards and stuff when I was in school. And I would release, they would have software or firmware, and I would release the software and firmware under GPL or MIT or BSD license or any, whatever the popular license of the time was. But I would put the files up, and I would just say, these are the Eagle CAD files or the Gerber files, and I guess do what you want with them, but the idea that you could even license them, I actually had no idea. I didn't know about Maskworks or what was copyright. Is it schematic copyrighted or is it patented or what? So I just put it up and I said, enjoy yourself. So for example, and I'm going to go through specific examples of projects and why I open sourced them or why I published them. So this was a project I did. This was actually a little bike light wheel thing, and you spin the wheel and the lights display a message or an image like a biohazard. And I actually did this project to learn microcontrollers because I was an engineer and learning electronics, and this seemed like a cool thing. And my roommate was really into making persistent vision art LED projects. We made really big ones. And I was always like, hey, I'd like to build this stuff too. You want to show me how you do this stuff? And he was always kind of like, not really. You're on your own. And so I was like, all right, fine. So I downloaded a freeware version of EagleCAD. And you can see my circuit boards are only 3 inches long because that's the limit of EagleCAD. So I had to take 3 boards and then I'd staple them together. That's why it's done that way, to make them long and fit on my bike wheel. When I made this, and I actually did many revisions, and this particular version I never put up because it's so embarrassing. I didn't feel like anyone needed to see it. It just went to Burning Man, and I rode around on it. And I ended up putting it online later when I revised it and made it better, and I put it under a non-commercial license. And I want to tell you that it doesn't matter whether you put something under a non-commercial license, because someone will probably come along and make a derivative anyways, and it'll be closed source, and they might be your ex-boyfriend. Okay, so I'm just telling you, if this is gonna happen, from then on, I never did anything non-commercial. I never released anything under a Creative Commons non-commercial license, because I was like, wow, that really backfired. Another project I did to learn microcontrollers, and this was a more complicated one, was making an MP3 player. Now, all of you old schoolers who were doing electronics in 2004 and 2003 probably remember that building MP3 players was the hot new thing. Everyone was building their own DIY MP3 players because there were MP3 chips. And I'd see all these people doing projects, and I was like, wow, I really want to make my own. And because there were so many examples online, and people actually started to put up files and say, well, I don't know what license this would be under, but I guess it's free for you to use it any way you want. So I actually got a kickstart and designed my own MP3 player, and it went into a mint tin. And this is my first breakout board PCB, and I could only afford two chips, so I had to desolder this one to make the final version, which is why all the chips were pulled off. Because I did this project based on all these people's generous donations of code examples, even if it was in another language or used different chips, because I use all of these examples, and that was how I really learned a lot about microcontrollers and electronics, I said, well, you know, like, I should give back, right? So that's why I put those files up online and for free to use. And a lot of people ended up making these, and, you know, of course, you know, people contacted me and were like, yeah, you know, this was in the Slashdot, this was in the New York Times, and it was on a bunch of other sites, and everyone was like, oh man, I'm totally gonna like make and sell these because you put the files online, you said it's totally cool. And I got a lot of people who, you know, even showed me like, here are prototypes and I'm gonna make manufacture these, and it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm still in school and like that's good, I guess. I was kind of a little upset because I was like, well, you're making money off of something that I kind of gave away for free and I didn't really even consider this possibility. But it turns out that it didn't work out anyways because you know, Apple had the iPod. So it doesn't matter, right? So saying that people, you know, I have so many projects where I'll release them and I'll get like 20 people emailing and be like, oh, I'm gonna manufacture these and sell them on Canal Street. And it turns out that it's a little more complicated than just that. And then, you know, okay, so I know a little bit about electronics, but it's time to graduate. And so I was like, well, you know, maybe I can con my advisor into letting me build a cell phone jammer for my thesis. And that worked out great. And so I built the cell phone jammer. And the thing about cell phone jammers, and you know, I don't know if you people who aren't from America, it's actually totally illegal to use them. In some countries it is, but it's illegal to manufacture, sell, use cell phone jammers. So I was like, okay, well, I don't have to worry about anyone like ripping this off and, you know, making a fortune off of it because you can't. So it turned out that, you know, nobody ever, I mean, it was just too complicated and expensive to make anyways. You know, people wanted to manufacture cell phone jammers, they would do it in a simpler way. But it turned out that I instead just got hate mail saying how I'm a terrorist because I'm showing, you know, Al-Qaeda how to build cell phone jammers, and, you know, this is why we're all gonna die. You know, there's always trade-offs. And then my final, or my second to final example is, a very basic project that I made as a giveaway to incoming students. We wanted to do something very simple that we could make, you know, 100 kits, and, you know, freshmen would come in, we'd teach them how to solder, and it was a rush for, you know, a dormitory. And so just, you know, spells, letters in the air. There's actually a kit in the goodie bag from Evil Mad Scientist that's, I think, kind of does this. And so I didn't actually open source it at first, and then eventually I put it up online, and, you know, I had it as a kit. And the thing is, actually, it was such a stupid design that it was never used by anybody. I mean, people would look at it and be like, well, it's just like 8 LEDs and a microcontroller. Like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, why'd you even bother? So it turns out that, you know, putting up stuff online, if it's so basic, you don't have to worry about somebody, like, ripping it off because it was actually cheaper for them to use whatever they had in their box of parts than to, you know, to use what I do. And this is, you know, this is, people ask me a lot about, like, well, you know, you put your files up, what if people manufacture and sell this? And so this is actually the final example of a project I did before Adafruit, which is an open source synthesizer. And the story behind this is my friend really wanted a TB-303 Roland clone because he really wanted to make techno. And these clones are like over $1,000 on eBay. They haven't been made since 1984. And it was like, he really wanted one and we couldn't afford it. And we're like, well, wait a minute. We're like analog engineers and this is, you know, a single oscillator synth. I mean, how hard can it be? So, you know, we went online and there were all these people who made them. And we're like, okay, well, can we just like get your schematics and like we'll build our own? We only want to make one. And they're like, no, we're not going to give it. And we're like, no, we don't want to sell them. We just want to make one. And they're like, we don't want to share anything with you. And I'm like, well, you're like, what do you care? And they're like, well, we're German. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So, you know, what are you going to argue? So in the end, we were so upset. It turns out that my friend's German too. So I don't know, maybe for whatever reason, we were so upset. We said, fuck this. We're going to make our own clone of this, you know, old synthesizer. And we're going to do such a good job that it'll put you to shame. And then nobody else will ever have to go through this frustration of, you know, wanting to build something that other people have built and have done a pretty good job and done all the research, but aren't willing to share their information. So, you know, we bought the broken synth off eBay for like $200 and we took it apart and we traced out all the parts and schematics and we measured the transistors and we figured out what was going, you know, looked up data sheets and I wrote a sequencer from scratch. And then, you know, sort of halfway through, we're like, well, you know, if we're going to like do all this work, we might as well maybe make kits for other people, because, you know, if we're going to make circuit boards, we might as well get 100 made. And so The thing is that we were actually a little worried because we did know that there was such a demand for these synthesizers that we're like, well, if we give away everything, somebody may end up, you know, taking these files and you know, putting us out of business, and you know, we'll lose all our money before we even get off the ground. So we actually came up with a sort of compromise. We said, all right, well, let's break even. We'll make, you know, we put $20,000 in to buy all the parts and everything. That's how much it cost. And we're like, we don't want to lose that money, so let's make that money back. And then once we make that money back, then we'll release all the files, open source hardware. So we actually did that. And what's interesting is that, you know, after two runs, we put the files up, and we're like, okay, like we're waiting for this onslaught. And it never happened. In fact, the only time that people ended up making their own versions when we didn't is when we didn't have the kits in stock. We actually couldn't keep them in stock because they were in such high demand that the demand ended up pushing people to say, well, I'm on this waiting list for a year. I'm just going to like make my own if that's okay. So you know, think about that. There is a difference between you know, putting stuff online and your worst fears occurring and what actually does occur. And you know, now I'm actually not interested in this project anymore. It's old enough that I've moved on to other stuff. But I'm lucky because there's other people making them. And so there's like about a half a dozen or dozen individuals and companies that are manufacturing this kit. And it's good because we designed and documented it well enough that there'll be plenty of acid techno for all of us well into the future, which I think is great. Other people may dislike, but I hate house music, so that's how it is. But what's interesting, and this is a weird thing that occurred, is because it became such a ubiquitous design. Like every TB303 clone out there pretty much is a derivative of the ZoxBox, and there's like quite a few of them now, is that we now see people manufacturing this, you know, for sale in stores, and we say, hey, you know, our license kind of asks that you just put some attribution on, just say, you know, this was based on the ZoxBox designed by Adafruit or Lady Ada or whatever, and they say, well, you have to prove to me that you designed it because I don't believe you. That's how ubiquitous it got. Or maybe they're just assholes. I don't know. Anyways, so after this is when I started the business. So that's the end. This is all the stuff that happened before. And so, you know, after the business, now when I make stuff, I actually release the files immediately. I don't worry about this breaking even thing because I've determined that it actually doesn't matter. So now I'm actually going to talk about the reasons why, more generally, instead of just examples. Okay. So, it doesn't seem like it makes any sense whatsoever to do open source hardware, right? I mean, like, come on, let's like think about it like logically. Because if you do something that's good, it'll probably be stolen from you. And if you do something bad, you'll be made fun of, right? So there's actually like, there's only that mediocre middle way, but you'll just be ignored. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons I like to do open source hardware, and I think a lot of people do, is because they're, you know, they want to show off what they've done. And I think that unfortunately there is this cloud that goes with a silver lining. When you release stuff, especially online, I think people online, they want to seem smarter by critiquing what you've done. And so, you know, I release projects I've worked on for months or a year or more, and you know, there's always going to be like a couple dozen people who email me and say like, you're really stupid for picking that op amp. And I'm like, maybe I spec that op amp for a reason, jerk, but it still frustrates me, right? It still frustrates me and it hurts my feelings because I'm human. And of course it hurts when somebody says like, oh, your design totally sucks and this is stupid and this is baby programming for pot smokers. And of course it hurts our feelings, right? So what I'm saying is that what we can do, perhaps, as a community is, actually, I don't understand this meme, but Phil put the slide in. What we can do as a community is maybe figure out a way to get all these people who you know, in actuality are just jealous because they don't have the ability to do what, you know, they're looking at, you know, right? You spent so much time on that, what a waste. It just means that, like, you know, I wish I could have spent that much time instead I'm going to be watching, like, The Wire or whatever, 24 hours. And I think that if we can bring these people in and make them part of the community so that they have something to share. And I think open source software does this a little bit better, but we're still starting out. Get these people who are haters and bring them in and make them part of the community. And I think that will solve one of the problems. But you know, just be aware that if you're relying on external validation only, that you'll get crushed a little bit. Okay, and so here's another thing, and this is a question that I get asked a lot, and usually it comes right after the question or comment, well, I'd really like to do open source hardware, but what if something really bad happens, right? What if someone manufactures my design and starts making money off of it, and he doesn't share any with me? Or, you know, what if I'm cloned in China? Or, you know, what if I'm ignored or whatever? And it turns out that I always kind of imagine like the Arduino team at breakfast every morning, kind of like sits there and is like, well, what the fuck were we thinking, right? There's what a stupid idea, especially like every day where they're like, it's like it's 9 a.m., they're reading the paper, and there's like another Arduino killer in the news, right? So, but I think it's important, and why I'm not talking about business so much in this talk is there is a big difference between doing open source hardware and running a business. And trust me, you can be very good at open source hardware and very bad at running a business, right? And vice versa, and both. And you can be bad at both. But the thing is that if you do open source hardware, whether or not you succeed at running your business, which is, again, a completely different skill set, right, which is unrelated, your project will at least live on. And I think that, you know, we'll go back to the slide, being obscure is worse than being ubiquitous. And also, you know, and I do see a lot of, like, clones of my stuff all over the place, and you know, people making derivatives and not attributing me is, you know, one thing, and or like denying that I even made it in the first place and asking me to prove that I made it. And I think that, you know, yeah, it gets me frustrated, and I have fear and frustration, anger and sadness, but you have to reframe it a little bit. And, you know, okay, sure, it is a little annoying to me sometimes that there's people mass manufacturing my synthesizer and not giving me attribution, perhaps. But on the other hand, it's kind of great that there's so many of these synthesizers out there, and that of all the designs that they wanted to manufacture, they chose mine because it was the best, right? So think about it that way. Yay, synth. So, or anything else, right? I mean, if you're getting, it's like, right, the piracy is a tax on success. Right? I mean, like, there's no copyright Zunes on Canal Street, right? You know? So think about it that way, right? This is, you know, it's always, whether or not you open source, of course, it's not going to matter. But you can think of it that way. If somebody is making your stuff, it's because you did a really good job. Okay. Another reason you might be interested in open source hardware is because you're an ideological freak and you're just like, well, freedom is in speech. Right? It's great. And I do agree with this, and I think it, you know, it's definitely a good motivator. And you know, it helps people a lot. There's definitely, I've learned a lot more by looking at other people's open source hardware designs and, you know, seeing what they did, and, you know, I respect them, so I'm like, well, if they chose this part, they probably did it for a reason, so I should either ask them or research more. And, you know, I learned programming a lot by looking at open source software, and, you know, because the code was available, I could look at it, modify it, and so that's definitely one of the main reasons that I think you should do open source hardware as well. You can use open source hardware as a marketing term, you know, if you're running a business, and you want to say like, oh, you know, our stuff's open source hardware or open source software. You know, that is one thing you can do, and I think a lot of people here who do run businesses are taking advantage of that. But I would like to warn you. If you're saying that something's open source hardware, but then you're spending all night thinking of ways you can get around open source hardware restrictions, like, oh, well, I'll put up the file, but I'll obfuscate them, or, you know, I'm going to put up the files, but later, or, like, you know, you do all these little tricks and loopholes, I'm watching you. So is everyone else. Okay. And then, you know, of course, the final big reason for doing open source hardware is, you know, to be part of an awesome community of people, who are many of whom are here. And it's fantastic. I love to work on electronics. I work with people on electronics all the time over email, and I've met awesome, great people by being in open source hardware, and I think that's fantastic. And I think, again, people learn more, and by sharing, they get to sort of advance as engineers. So, you know, there's all these reasons, and a lot of them are kind of like related to the individual. Like, how can my company benefit from open source hardware? Or, you know, how can I benefit as an engineer as open source hardware? How can I, like, save time on this project by using somebody else's design? But I also want to remind you that when we give to charity, we don't give just to get our name on a building, right? We give to become better people. Because giving is a way to quiet that sort of whiny, annoying toddler inside of us that's selfish and grabby. So giving away is a way of sort of releasing that and sort of growing up, and not just being so grabby and selfish, but giving to other people and giving without asking to have necessarily our name on a building, just because we know it's important to give. And one of the nice things I like is that it is, in a sense, viral, and I don't mean in the GPL sense of the word viral, but rather, I give, and then maybe I inspire other people to give because they're like, well, if like she can do it, and like she's a girl, I mean, like how hard can it be, right? So maybe I'll do open source hardware too, and I think I've tried to convince some people to do open source hardware. I mean, it's not for everybody, I will agree, but I've tried to convince some people to join in because I think it's important. So, you who have donated to open source hardware by giving away your designs are awesome. I just wanted to put that slide in. Okay, so I want to sort of finish up with this quote from Nina Paley, and I really like Nina Paley, and she's an artist, not necessarily an engineer, but she sort of talks about artwork, and you can think of your engineering projects this way, as children that need to grow up and sort of move on. And again, not try to be grabby and selfish and keep it to yourself, but let it go. And yeah, it's gonna make mistakes. And there's gonna be things that happen that don't make you comfortable, just like if you have little sisters or children or little brothers, you'll see the same thing. And they'll make the same mistakes you did, but that's just part of the process. And that's part of them growing up, as both you and your project. So, to wrap up, too long, didn't listen. Okay, we'll pay attention now. So why do I create open source hardware? Okay, so one is to join a community. I have this, examples for all of these. So when I was an undergrad at MIT, and I was like a sophomore or freshman, there was this totally awesome guy, big man on campus. His name was Bunny Wang. He was so cool, okay? Everybody wanted to know Bunny, because he was like this rock star engineer, and he cracked this Xbox, he was awesome, and I was like, wow. But I was an undergrad, so I wasn't cool enough to talk to him. But now I talk to him every day, because we work together on open source hardware. Okay, so another reason. So remember I talked about my roommate who did the Prisons of Vision art, and I said hey, can you give me some ideas of how to do this sort of stuff so I want to build it? And he's like, not so much. Wasn't really interested in sharing. Well, he died unexpectedly a few years later. And everything that he made, and he made fantastic, beautiful art, is kind of unmaintainable. I mean, there's two or three people who know how to maintain it, but for the most part, it's kind of stuck in a crate. And sometimes it gets pulled out and somebody can go in and try to make it work, but because he never released, I don't even think that he even thought this was a possibility. He didn't release the schematics, he didn't release the design files, he didn't release the firmware or the source code. It's just this mass, and it's a little sad to me because it's such great art and it doesn't live on beyond him, So, I wish he would have open sourced stuff. I don't know, maybe if open source hardware had been around and more popular, he would have considered it. And finally, I do open source hardware, because I think it makes me a better engineer. And engineering is really important to me because it's sort of my art form. And when you're designing something just for yourself, you're going to take a lot of shortcuts, and you're not going to do a very good job, and you're not going to document stuff, and you're not going to take the care that you will take when you know that 10,000 people are going to be looking at it and critiquing it and asking you questions and trying to build it. And so I think that when I do projects now, I try to do a better job of designing and documenting, and I feel like I've become a better engineer, slowly but surely, without having to get a real engineer job, which is kind of a bonus. So I want to finish and say, you always give back, you always get back more than what you give, so please give. Thank you. And then, I don't think we have time for questions.